we're manipulatable by whatever wants to manipulate us if it knows how to. And these big tech companies have hired all the psychologists and done all the research, the behaviorists to figure out how to give us the little dopamine teases and the incentive reward to get us addicted to our screens and everything else. And that's the world we're living in. It is kind of a zombie world, but in our sort of like being separated from our souls, I think that the sort of bright side, if there is one, is that also anyone can find their soul when they realize they've lost it.
Mm.
We do have that opportunity, but that's getting into the philosophical, spiritual more.
You touched a bit on behavior modification.
Right.
And I'm going to preface this just by saying that I love America and it's my favorite country on the planet. And this is not a rag on our nation at all. But apparently there's this phenomenon going on right now where there's a bunch of scantily clad women on TikTok and other places on the internet. I'm not on TikTok yet, so this is all secondhand information, but apparently what is happening is on 90% of those accounts, if you scroll back far enough in their feed, like their first posts are just normal women in like sweatshirts, hanging out, living their lives. But since they get rewarded to act a certain way, and for the sake of this conversation, we'll just call them TikTok thoughts.
Okay.
That's okay.
Sure.
That like that the algorithms reward a certain type of behavior, and like slowly over time, they take off their clothes and act differently. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest example that I thought of when you were talking about that. And it's just it's not even that, like the algorithms are kind of like a virus in a certain way.
They are.
And I do feel like we're living in the most interesting part of history so far, and that future generations will look back and laugh at us and be like, what were they doing?
Hopefully.
Which I think about that all the time. Mm. And it's just, the algos, like, they don't even care. Like, the algos don't want to see naked women. Like, they don't care what's popular. They just care that it's popular.
Right.
They actually don't care at all, because they're not feeling entities, because they're not.
They're just artificial intelligence that has no feelings and no anything like compassion or empathy or those type of things. It's just what are going to make different people look at their screens the most. And that's what's really screwed up about it, because a lot of us are like, yay, free internet things. Like, yay, free TikTok, free, and some people even make money off of it, and free, Facebook and all that.
Yeah.
But we're paying with our attention.
Bringing complex ideas down to earth based on their value, not group identity. This is The Daily Archetype.
If you want someone to remain ignorant, just make sure they think in groups of identity rather than groups of values. Let's promote understanding, not ignorance.
This is The Daily Archetype.
What's up, archetypal friends? I'm your host, Isaac J. Miller, here on the only podcast that's constantly rediscovering our innate archetypal value structure. So this episode gets into Ian McGilchrist's documentary, The Divided Brain. Now, we're just speaking of that in general, and I will leave links to some of these things in the show notes and such, so you can participate and have this knowledge for yourself. Of course, I highly recommend The Divided Brain documentary, as well as Ian McGilchrist's writings. Jade and I, as well as maybe one or two other people, will have more discussions on this and his books. Hopefully one day I can talk to Dr. McGilchrist. But as you heard there in the little introduction clip, this is so integral and important to our reality now, in that just as Ian McGilchrist warns, our world has become overly abstract. And it's also really important to put it in context with the last podcast I published, which was from the Quantum Photonics Club with Dr. Ronald Cicero. And stay tuned, because I have another one that will be published soon with him, as well as Miguel Nicolelis. who is a world-renowned neuroscientist that he had worked with. But as all these guys talk about, and so many other psychologists and philosophers, the abstract world has become like our natural world, but it's just abstraction. So we have to figure out how to reintegrate as it is the natural world. And we first have to reintegrate with our bodies, as Jade talks about here in her somatic approach, and ideally reintegrate with how nature works. And this one did have some technical issues, which is why Jade is a little distracted. She's kind of babysitting at the same time. I've had some sort of bad luck lately with having some of these podcasts that take a little more editing, which is fine. It's not that much. It's just takes some time, which is why there's been less published. But I have actually more of these backed up to edit, and I have more people coming to help me to do so. And contact me through social media if you want to help in any way to help the endeavors to push what we try to get at here with the Daily Archetype Media. And speaking of that, stay tuned to our social media, which now includes, of course, a lot of Clubhouse. And we will continue to have these discussions, both live and some recorded, and continue to rediscover our primordial archetypal value structure. Now, please enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Daily Archetype, a value-sharing community.
I am recording live with Jade Sabansky. And today we're going to be talking about The Divided Brain, which is Dr. Ian McGilchrist's special work on why our brain is divided yet asymmetrical, and so many of the things that we'll try to get into today. Jade is a brain health educator, among a few other things, and she has had some interest in this area. And I've been looking for someone to discuss the divided brain as Ian McGilchrist ideas with me. So finally doing it. Jade, what's up? Tell us about you and yourself and what's up with you, and then we'll dive in.
Yeah, thanks for the introduction. I'm a somatic educator and certified brain health coach, and my training is specified to the integration of the body and the mind, because one perspective, what they taught me when I was in college was the mind is what the brain does. And somatics looks at that and says the reverse, that the brain is what the mind does. Because with things like mindfulness, mindful meditation, somatics, you can actually change your brain. And so it's just a really cool space to be in right now. I love working with people. There's also brain types as there are personality types. And so helping people find out their brain types is very, very rewarding for me too. And thanks for having me on in this introduction, because another theory that I spend most of my time with is Paul McLean's triune brain. And so it's nice to like conceptually have this divided brain too. So it's almost like the puzzle gets more interesting.
It does. Tell us quickly about the triune brain before we get into this other stuff.
Old, middle, new. So the oldest part of our brain is the reptilian brain. I'm sure you've heard of fight or flight, the amygdala, the automatic stuff that makes the very base level of making you hear. The next level would be the mammalian brain, which is feelings and emotions. And then the newest layer, the top layer, is where you can find all of the good stuff. And the idea is kind of like the brain filled up as a neural tube. And then once that layer got full, it had to go back on itself and do something else. And then once that got full, it had to go back on itself. And that's why people say your brain doesn't fully develop until you're 25 to 27, because the neural grooves are still forming and there's still an expansion of connections there and things like that.
And actually, don't be embarrassed, even if somehow Ian McGilchrist ever watches this, but is it true that you met kind of Ian McGilchrist, but you fell asleep?
There were so many different factors at play.
I said, don't be embarrassed. It's okay.
There were so many different factors at play that week, but school can get pretty intense for me sometimes. And there was a very special guest once, a guest speaker that we had. And anyone who comes across Ian McGilchrist on YouTube or is lucky enough to watch the documentary or whatever can attest to the smooth, relaxing cadence.
Oh, yes.
And when you take that and you pair it with extreme exhaustion, certain results might happen.
So he was lecturing at your school when you were in college. a couple years ago? So
this was actually for my somatic education program.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And it was more like, so the director of my program founded Humanistic Psychology.
Mm-hmm.
She really is just incredible and amazing and has brought a lot of really interesting people to interview and talk about somatics with. And so what typically happens with experts is they would watch a session of maybe a somatic movement or some type of healing process. And then there would be a discussion afterwards about like how that compares to whatever this person is saying. So we did like somatics and biofeedback, somatics and Feldenkrais. And then
take a nap. Point,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
okay. Yeah. It happens. No, that's interesting. I mean, yeah, he does have that, the kind of lecturing voice. It's very soft and soothing. And although he gets, I think what might be a little bit more interesting for those who are getting into him is one, his book, two, his documentary that we're going to talk about a little bit today. And then three, when he does like podcast interviews, especially the last, well, actually both of them he did with Jordan Peterson were really good. He'll get a little bit more worked up there, but when he's lecturing, it'll be a little bit like soothing and monotone, which is fine. But so we decided to go over the Divided Brain documentary, and I want to go over some of these points and details and the idea, kind of use it as like an introduction for maybe I'll do another one of these later when I can get with somebody who's like read the book. it's kind of a big challenging book. It actually has two parts. It has the first part is kind of like the psychiatry, the biological part as to the divided brain. And the second part is like the history and philosophy part. But yeah, so we're going to be talking about the documentary today, The Divided Brain, which is Ian McGilchrist's work. So you just watched that documentary recently. And what are some of the things that stood out to you initially?
It's really exciting to be a part of a time and conversation when we're looking at this kind of stuff, where essentially what he's saying is that the right and left hemisphere are part of the same brain, but they operate and function completely different from one another. And it's this dichotomy that allows us to be so, to have so much dimension in the human experience, which is really cool. One thing that I think would have taken the documentary to the next level is if we actually looked at some brain scans or if we looked at some images. It's just super helpful. I mean, hands and feet are two separate things for us, and it makes life much easier to have both. And that's kind of how I think about the right and left brain, where the left brain is super, super logical, and I'm thinking about the straight lines thing. And then the right brain is like, what is the artsy thing? And people sometimes just
the wiggly lines.
Yeah. People at a very basic level typically think like the left brain would be artsy because of like lefties and creativity. And like, but it's actually the opposite of that, where it's the right brain, the right hemisphere. And so we could use Paul McLean's triune brain here a little bit, because what we're talking about, I said old brain, middle brain, new brain. What we're talking about here is just in the new brain. So it's not like you have a right and left amygdala. It's that you have specialized areas. So language is on the left side. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is that the left side of the brain is regarded as the happy side of the brain. And there have been studies that have shown that if there's like a contusion, a concussion, some kind of TBI on the left hemisphere, that that person becomes like, kind of loses their ability to be happy. And so it's interesting to take that into consideration when we think about how the left brain is actually functioning.
In the documentary, he was only able to get into an overview because it was just a little over an hour documentary. The book is sort of long, and he's about to publish a book that he says is longer than the Bible. It's called The Matter of Things. So he does a lot of work and research in these areas, but in the documentary, he kind of summed it up as like you were saying, the right brain is more of what connects to poetry and music and myth. It's like the embodied side of yourself. And then the left brain just kind of has to make sense all that and has language. And it likes to divide things up into straight lines into what it can manipulate. One thing I was saying to you recently as we were sort of preparing for this is how actually sort of in another conversation that tied into this is how that lately I've been on Clubhouse more and I'll listen to people get into arguments and sometimes I have to like moderate them and that type of thing, which is fine. But it's like they'll be just getting lost in these like abstraction wars or like weird mythology wars or narrative wars. And all of that's fine, but it's just like disembodied abstraction, which is just so like the reality is in our bodies. You can't deny the reality of our suffering, our longing, our striving, our feelings that are in the body. And although I feel like a lot of times people get lost in abstraction intentionally because those feelings that are embodied, whether you want to call that just somatic, like you talk about, or right brain, that stuff is difficult. But if you get into the abstraction world, you kind of avoid that. Although I feel like the abstraction world is useful as long as it stays embodied. You know, like a good artist or a good creative person that might write stories or produce art or whatever the case, it will be things that like pull out of their own feelings and then others can connect with. But that's sort of like the right brains trying to attach with each other properly. Whereas what we do often is just get in the abstraction side of like the straight lines and the bits we can manipulate in the left brain. And the reason is because we have this sort of need for control or to feel control. Yeah. But I don't know. What do you think as to why that we're so overly left-brained these days, especially?
Well, is that the way it is or is that just the way it seems?
That's an interesting question. But what do you think? Do you think it seems that way? Do you think it is that way or some of both?
I want to bring this back to two structures in the brain that are in our left hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And there's Broca's area and Wernicke's area. So Broca's area, it helps us express what we want to express in the language that we know. So it's really crucial in, both areas are crucial in languaging. But if Broca's area is damaged, say, then a person has what's called Broca's aphasia. And they maybe are trying to say something, like maybe they're thinking, I want to go upstairs to the apartment and lie down right now because I think I should just sleep this off. But all that comes out is room or apartment or like just sparse words. Whereas Wernicke's area is about actually like making sense because people with Wernicke's aphasia, it just sounds like gibberish and it just sounds like Jabberwocky talk. So the left hemisphere having language is a supreme advantage because it's like, it's like anything else. Like if you, what you know is to an extent in society only as valuable as the degree to which you can explain it. And so while the right hemisphere might be better at like, it's communicating in a language that isn't language.
Right.
Because things can communicate and emit information without ever like formally going through that. Because 97% of all communication is nonverbal. So it's hard. So it's hard for me to answer or it's hard for me to even think about like if the world is truly left brain dominant as it seems like it is. Or if it's just that's what we see.
True. So like Ian McGilchrist put forth this idea that there's been ups and downs in history when, like, I think that the first one was like pre-Socratic time, like he's really into Heraclitus. And then the second one was, sometime in the Greek or Greco-Roman. But then the last one was the Renaissance time period, where basically it's not like we're all about the right hemisphere exactly. But it's more that the further back you go in time, at least what he was putting forth, was that we're more and more right hemisphere dominant as you go back in time. And probably what's good or maybe best, but who knows, is to be something like balanced between the right and left. But And maybe at different times in history, we've been more balanced, but with a favoring toward one or the other. And further back in history is more favoring towards the right. And now at least it seems to be more favoring towards the left hemisphere sort of way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
And one way that he studied this, both in the book, at least one chapter, and then in the documentary, is the split brain patients. So these people would basically have the right and left hemisphere detached for those who are trying to deal with seizures. And for the most part, I think it cured their seizures. But then it was like two people in one. And basically, the left side of their body had a different personality from the right side of their body. So they would sit down in front of a puzzle, and then the right hand would try to solve the puzzle. And then after a little bit, the left hand would push the right hand out of the way and solve the puzzle quickly. Or they would be trying to pick out an outfit to wear for the day, and then the right hand and left hand would kind of get in a fight over what to wear for the day. So probably the best thing to do is not so much like, let's be all right brain or let's be all left mm-hmm. brain, but to try to bring those into like a harmony or like a balance, a yin yang, something like that.
Yes, I agree. I think that one of the themes is this idea of separation versus no separation. And I want to ask you, what do you think the importance of that is? And also explain what I mean.
Right, because it seems like, and I'm just kind of going off the top of my head here, but it seems like if we're not very integrated, I'll say, and you can see this is why that like people, even if they're 40, 50 years old, you know, regardless of their age, sometimes young adults, sometimes older adults, they will seem very disembodied. And they will seem very like one personality, but then like a repressed personality will come out of control, almost similar to like, you know, what Jung would talk about as shadow, or even most psychiatrists or psychologists would talk about as like out of control repression, that type of thing. So when we're separated, that type of thing happens. It's like you've got like a prisoner within that always wants to come out, and then will sometimes uncontrollably, or will manipulate the master of the prison as it might seem. But the right thing to do is to have both sides of yourself integrated into one. So rather than separate, have them unified. And we were talking about this a little bit preparing for this, and I think you used a different word. And then I said, it's almost like a dance, only because there's a give and a take, and sometimes one might lead more than the other, and sometimes the other might lead more than the other. Yeah. Like sometimes they call the right brain is often called like the automatic. So basically the left brain will be learning, and then once that it's encoded in the consciousness, then it becomes automatic from the right brain.
That was all awesome. And I actually was just referencing to the fact that the right brain doesn't understand separation. The left brain wants to separate everything.
Right. Get it into bits it can manipulate.
And the ability to distinguish and the ability to see the entire picture are two separate skills that are integral to a comfortable human experience. And I really like the way that somebody in the documentary described this, because he basically said, you know, it wouldn't make sense to say, this is my lower arm and this is my upper arm, or this is the bottom of my lower arm and this is the top of my upper arm, because it's like, dude, it's just your arm. What are you talking about? I don't see this distinction. And even that is an incomplete analogy, because it's so much more intensified in the actual experience. Whereas the left brain is like, no, this is my left arm. And I know that there's these bones and these fibers and this skin is here, and my left arm is the issue. So when I go to the doctor, we're going to talk about my left arm, not my right arm. And so just having those two separate skills, it's like, well, shout out to anyone raising children.
Shout out.
It really is
challenging.
Yes. Yes, it is. And with kids, and Jordan Peterson talks about this too, it's a balance between wanting them to thrive and explore and play and grow and expand, and they really do need movement and, you know, play on the jungle gym, climb the tree or whatever. But also you don't want them to crack their head open. And so the ability to have fun and the ability to kill fun work in opposition seemingly, but they're actually working together towards some overarching goal. And that's exactly, in my opinion, what's going on with the right and left hemisphere, where they are opposing each other, but also can't be without.
They're like coming into a unity, but it's always going to be a give and take, because sometimes one will be more needed and sometimes the other will be more needed. And it's hard to say which that is. Like, did you watch that clip with Jordan Peterson talking to? Okay. Because he made the point in that little Jordan Peterson clip, which I'll link below this later for people. He'll always clarify himself, Emil Gilchrist, that both hemispheres are completely important, but he just thinks that the world is too left hemisphere dominant right now. It's still a bit of a challenge, because maybe what it is the right hemisphere can't go away, but it just doesn't have the language. It doesn't have the concrete things to put into this world to be like, hey, here's what's going on. Whereas that's kind of the world of the left hemisphere. But maybe the issue is less so that one is more dominant than the other. In fact, maybe it's even the other way around. The right hemisphere is just as dominant as always, but not as seen or as obvious or as noticed. But there's that division and separation that's a bit too much. But what do you think?
Yeah, that's a really excellent point. And that's what I was trying to talk about a little bit earlier too. I feel like Ian McGilchrist's argument, or one of his main arguments at least, is, yeah, the left brain is lit, but do not sleep on the right brain. And it's basically like, we are just overlooking some of our right-sided tendencies right now in society, as far as we love when things can get measured, but sometimes the easiest thing to measure isn't the best metric.
Yeah.
And what an easy example of this obviously is when it comes to weight and dieting and everything else. Think about how BMI is so much more important than weight. But even aside from that, like you could be a healthy weight, you could be underweight and have not been nourishing your body at all.
So yeah, even beyond that is like body fat percentage and then so many other percentages. So it's hard to pin these things down, and same thing. Yeah. On the brain, but yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. And so I feel like he spends a lot of time talking about how the right brain gives the stuff that makes you feel like you get the point. Because without all of that feeling stuff and the emotional side of things, things can feel completely empty. Like if you're trying to date someone and they check off all of the boxes that you want, but there's just not that, as people say, spark there.
Chemistry.
If you just don't feel that connection,
the magic,
I feel like that's all coming from the right brain, but in more than just your dating sphere and more than just your weight, I think in every aspect of your life, where it's actually the thing that makes us feel human.
That's an interesting one, because I feel like what's happening in things like this, like trying to have a connection with somebody, especially younger adults or less experienced anyway, we might have some misguided, like, oh my God, this person is like checks ABC boxes, or they are, this or that. And so they might give a person too much of like puppy love, or even too much like ill-advised chemistry. Maybe unconsciously it reminds them of their mother, or the opposite of their mother, or their father, or something. So it is this feeling stuff, but it's more like it's when there's a connection, and sometimes it's the right connection and sometimes it's not. It's just like when we are working in our sort of like straight line left brain, you know, everything's about like figure, like we can feel it out, figure it out and everything else. But I feel like a lot of times the right brain does that, but in different ways. It's like, okay, I think this is the symbol I want, or like the type of person that I want to connect with. And then it feels it out by like trying to make a connection with this person. And then that feels like love and that type of thing. And of course it is, to a certain degree. All this also makes me think of another interesting phenomenon. Maybe I'll do a podcast separately on this guy, but have you seen the illusionist or maybe he's a mentalist, Darren Brown?
No, I have not.
Oh, I should have mentioned that to you when you were asking for Netflix recommendations. But he has a couple really good Netflix specials. The main one I think is called The Push. And what that's about basically is regular people. And it's like phase one. They figure out who are like day-to-day, just normal-ish people, but they're impressionable. And then they put them through this, like, I don't know if you'd call it a simulation or a, you know, it's like all real world stuff, but it's like they think they're at this like real fundraiser thing. And then basically throughout the whole thing, they do like little things and little things, little things to make them the person like do what's a little bit more questionable, a little bit more questionable, a little bit more questionable. But then they do it like somehow like for the greater good. Like, oh, we need to cover up that this person just died because we don't want to ruin this evening that would otherwise raise a lot of money for charity. Mm-hmm. So let's like hide this body or something. And they did this with like 10 or 20 people. It's not just like one sucker. But by the end of it, somehow they talked this person into pushing a person off a building. So it's like, yeah, within one day, a person will go from, I'm just a regular person gonna go like to this charity event, and then they kill a person.
Wow.
That's almost like sort of the dark side of how that there can be that misconnection between realities of like the embodied feeling reality connecting to the right brain trying to make sense of the world, connected to the left brain that's gonna put it in straight lines and stories, and then put your individual self within those realities of the also social cultural reality. And so you can do it in a good way, which would be like an artist connecting to the world, or you can do it in a bad way, which means that you could get manipulated by the culture. And it's even connecting with your like right brain value structure, which is, you know, like, let's do this thing for the good of whatever mankind or something. There's almost like a dark side to it if things aren't connected properly.
I think what you're touching on is the importance of integration.
Right.
And
right.
I spent a long portion of my career saying that if you're not consistent, you're not anything. But if you're not integrated, how could you be consistent? So it almost takes it takes one of my beliefs a level even deeper, because integration is the most important thing. Think about gas and brakes in your car, learning to drive. You need to integrate both of those functions, not just slam the brakes every time.
Yeah.
Stop sign.
Right.
And maybe I'm thinking a little stick shift heavy right now.
Oh, because you're learning to drive a stick shift right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. With that third pedal and all that other stuff. Yeah.
The clutch and everything.
The clutch and all those things. Yeah.
So I think what we're really kind of talking about right now, and the documentary talks about, integration would be beneficial. It's important to talk about integration because things seem really left hemisphere dominant right now.
Right.
And we're letting a lot of things go by the wayside, and we should actually be taking the left hemisphere with a grain of salt.
Yeah. The other way that I look at what you said and what I just said before that is in that conclusion to the book that I know I gave you a little too much homework. You just like were able to look over it. But that, like I was saying before we recorded, he published this book a little over 10 years ago. And then he was talking about in the conclusion to the book, and this is just sort of a paraphrase, but how that if we became too like focused on our technology and focused on connecting through technology rather than through nature and human nature and like real interpersonal connected relationships and those type of things, what the world would look like. And I think that's really important because some of us, depending on the age and how much you're paying attention, you may or may not remember what the world was like 10 years ago, but it has become sort of this weird zombie land, how that he described it, which is kind of this like disembodied, detached from our bodies and our unconscious and our right hemisphere, which makes us very like that Darren Brown example. That also happens just the way that like Jaron Lanier, who's like this technology philosopher, helped invent VR, virtual reality, and some other things. But he talks about how marketing isn't marketing or advertising anymore. It's behavior modification companies. So now things like Google and Facebook and big tech, They're not just saying like, here's some great ideas of like what to do with your money and stuff. They manipulate you to do that. Yeah. So that's sort of the disadvantage of a society that becomes detached, unintegrated, is we're manipulatable by whatever wants to manipulate us if it knows how to. And these big tech companies have hired all the psychologists and done all the research, the behaviorists and everything else to figure out how to give us the little dopamine teases and the incentive reward to get us addicted to our screens and everything else. And that's the world we're living in. It is kind of a zombie world, but in our sort of like being separated from our souls, I think that the sort of bright side, if there is one, is that also anyone can find their soul when they realize they've lost it. Mm. We do have that opportunity, but that's getting into the philosophical, spiritual more.
You touched a bit on behavior modification.
Right.
And I'm going to preface this just by saying that I love America and it's my favorite country on the planet. And this is not a rag on our nation at all. But apparently there's this phenomenon going on right now where there's a bunch of scantily clad women on TikTok and other places on the internet. I'm not on TikTok yet, so this is all secondhand information, but apparently what is happening is on 90% of those accounts, if you scroll back far enough in their feed, like their first posts are just normal women in like sweatshirts, hanging out, living their lives. But since they get rewarded to act a certain way, and for the sake of this conversation, we'll just call them TikTok thoughts. Okay. That's okay.
Sure.
that the algorithms reward a certain type of behavior, and like slowly over time, they take off their clothes and act differently. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest example that I thought of when you were talking about that. And it's just it's not even that, like, the algorithms are kind of like a virus in a certain way.
They are.
And I do feel like we're living in the most interesting part of history so far, and that future generations will look back and laugh at us and be like, what were they doing?
Hopefully.
Which I think about that all the time. Mm. And it's just the algos, like, they don't even care. Like, the algos don't want to see naked women. Like, they don't care what's popular. They just care that it's popular.
Right.
And
right.
They actually don't care at all because they're not feeling entities because they're not.
They're just artificial intelligence that has no feelings and no like anything like compassion or empathy or those type of things. It's just what are going to make different people look at their screens the most. And that's what's really screwed up about it, because a lot of us are like, yay, free internet things. Like, yay, free TikTok, free, and some people even make money off of it, and free, Facebook and all that.
Yeah.
But we're paying with our attention. The attention that we're selling is being sold to people who are not usually making money, or if they are, it's not very much. We're giving our attention to each other. And then there's a third party that's just manipulating that and making their own money off of it and manipulating our behavior. And it is part of the, not necessarily one hemisphere over the other as much as it's just the, rather than integration, we're being disintegrated. The disintegration is one that is kind of sad and scary, like a zombie world that most people don't realize that they're in. But the only good part to it, or one of the main one, is that it makes people get so alienated to themselves that they have to at some point wake up to it, like wake up to the reality. And that's what's like been such a phenomenon the last few years, especially the last 10-ish years, is like different kinds of like, hey, we're offering red pills and hey, come to the woke camp. And it's all about like waking up. And some of them do that differently or better than others. And they think it's about waking up. But that's the thing with like the left hemisphere. It's kind of like a teenager, you know, that thinks it's all smart, or a kid that thinks it's all smart. And it's like, hey, I got everything figured out. But a wise person knows that they've never got things figured out. And then when it thinks it's got everything figured out, then it starts making more mistakes. And so we're in a disintegrated world where people have to find their souls. Yeah, we slipped into the spiritual realm, sort of.
So there's this guy, Peter Russell's, is a medical scientist.
Okay.
And he wrote a phenomenal book called From Science to God.
Interesting.
And he has his doctorate in physics, and he explores how consciousness is the bridge between the two. Because neither one of those, science can't explain consciousness, neither can spirituality. He talks about what a fickle experience consciousness can be.
Yes. So it's all about trying to figure out how to reintegrate. Like towards the end of the documentary, they were talking about different cultures that are more in tune with their right hemisphere, or maybe integrated, like certain Native Americans, the Iroquois and some other Native American tribes, or native to the Western hemisphere, at least. And Ian McGilchrist was walking with one towards the end of the documentary in nature. And he's just talking about how, like, we are this mountain, we are this river or whatever. And so they look at it all as like one thing. And so maybe that's being more integrated, but we definitely do need to have both too, to where like that has this advantage and disadvantage. Like some people in those archaic cultures would be so sure that like sometimes somebody would get sick and it would be like because of their spirit animal, something happened or some things like that. And they're not being irrational. They just have different presuppositions. So there may be advantages and disadvantages to that right hemisphere dominance, but maybe the integration of the both is then something like being artist. But what's the most brain healthy way to reintegrate?
The best thing you could do for yourself is fall in love with your brain, because once you start to appreciate it and get to know the different structures and the different uses and the different things that both help and hurt your brain, it just puts you in a way better position to achieve any goal that you have for yourself. So the first step would be like actually cultivating an interest. And there's going to be different things for every person that draw them to neuroscience. So for me, it was the dream world, but for somebody else, it might be, how can I articulate myself better? Or how can I not be tired at 3 p.m. in the afternoon? Or, you know what? I really love my life. How can I live super long? Or, hey, I really hate my life. How do I get out of this pain? So mindfulness is one of the biggest things that a person can do. And the easiest way to be mindful is to just think about each of your five senses and then try and have special moments where you pick out five to seven things of whatever that sense is that you're focusing on. This is one of my biggest pet peeve catchphrases right now, but creating space.
Yeah.
But it's true that if you create space in your day for the question, are you sure? Are you sure? It's going to invite and evoke thoughts that you maybe wouldn't have had, especially when critical things come up. If you see something on the news that makes you uncomfortable, you can say, are you sure? And then you can investigate and see where it's really coming from. Or if somebody says something to you, and whether you like it or dislike it or have no opinion about it, it's extraordinarily powerful to know why. Because sometimes it's not going to be an answer that you know with words. Sometimes it's just going to be something that you know, and you don't have the languaging for why that is so. And that doesn't make it wrong at all. So that's the best way to integrate. Well, I mean, the real answer is the best way to integrate is somatics. And
it's your bias.
And that is my bias, because that is my profession, but it's the truest thing. The best way to integrate your body, I mean, your left and right hemisphere, is to understand the relationship between your body and your mind.
When you say that, and I know that there's like a whole practice with it, but is it like integrating the feelings that maybe you normally take for granted and integrating those with what your body's actually doing and what your life actually is? Or tell us a bit about that.
Yes. And an easier way to think about it is developing an understanding and appreciation for your individual first person experience and your ability to have a first person experience. Because if you go to a doctor, and this is where I think in 50 years we'll get there. I think that in the future, the first and third person experiences will be widely accepted as equal or cooperative ways of looking at the problem. So think about an example of going to the doctor.
Okay.
You're going to the doctor with some issue that you feel. Now, this doctor, this third party entity that has been trained and trained and trained in medical school and studying all the things, is diagnosing you with what he or she thinks is the problem and giving that whatever the solution might be, if it's antibiotic, if it's rest, whatever. I think that in the future, people will understand the importance of taking their first person experience seriously, because the first person opinion might not always be in agreement with the third person understanding of the situation that's going on. And just because that person went to medical school and is a doctor, like, that, what is, how could that possibly take away from the experience that the person is having?
Right. I think a lot of people, they don't want that. Like, our culture now is very averse to responsibility and liability on any level. And so now, like, the doctors are more and more not telling people what to do, but they're saying, here's a lot of like options and information, but make up your own mind. And then the patients of those doctors are saying, but tell me what to do, because nobody wants to make the decision. Because if either person makes that decision, whether that's first person or whatever, then they're responsible for it. And then if that doesn't work out, then they've got nobody to blame but themselves.
Right.
And maybe that's a disembodied or disintegrated left hemisphere dominance, because then that person feels like they can fail at something. Where if you put the responsibility on someone else, then the other person is at risk of failure.
Yes. Perfectionism, self-sabotage at its best, right? If I don't try my hardest at this thing and fail, I have the mental comfort of, well, I didn't try my hardest. So that's an explanation that I can hang on to. And when we label it as self-sabotage, it sounds negative and has, you know, not the best connotation to it. But it's important to understand that your brain is really just trying to keep you to survive. Your brain just wants survival. It's really just doing its best. So even to label it and judge that phenomenon as something negative might not be as lit as people think it is.
Well, I think what's happening there, and this is all just kind of like exploring this phenomena of what's going on between this hemisphere separation or like two personality disintegration and how to reintegrate. But it's that our environment is full of challenges, you know, just like animals in the wild or us maybe 100,000 years ago or whatever, tens of thousands of years ago at least. So what can be a threat, and what should we be afraid of? We're always trying to figure that out. And so we're trying to learn, like, are these people trustworthy? Are these people good? Because we're mostly in a social psychological environment, especially more and more as the world gets more modern. We're less dependent on, like, can we grow a potato or can we catch a rabbit? And more about, like, can this person not rip me off and not, like, take all my money and those kind of things. But the big weird dichotomy is, like, ideally, you should be building up bravery and self-trust and courage and that kind of thing. But to do that, you have to fail and then like go through your failure and get better at the things you failed at. But most people don't want to do that. They want to look at themselves as a victim, perhaps. And maybe this is like the disintegrated left hemisphere focus. But if you look at yourself as a victim and everybody else as predators, then what you don't have to do is go through failure so much, and you don't have to look at yourself as a problem, which I think is kind of like what I'm getting at, is that people don't want to admit that they're like make a conscious sort of left hemisphere admission that they themselves are the problem. Because if you yourself are the problem, there's no escaping that. You can't escape yourself. It's like not a lion or tiger in the bushes. It's like you are the lion or the tiger devouring yourself, and that you're the thing that you have to run from, but you can't because you're always there. But that's the immature disintegrated view, where the mature reintegrated view is, yes, I'm a monster. Yes, I'm a tiger. Yes, I can devour, but I can do so in a mature way to be strong and courageous and brave and devour the right things and devour myself when I'm doing the wrong thing, or be destructive where it needs to be destructive, or be powerful where it needs to be powerful. A lot of this culture is all about like all this like power stuff of like who has power and who doesn't. And even Ian McGilchrist talked about that in that Jordan Peterson clip. It's like this left hemisphere dominant world wants all this equality, which is impossible because nothing in nature is equal other than maybe it's all the same thing, but there's no equality in nature. But this like world wants us to be like, let's make everything equal. There's no equality in nature. It's just this wiggly, integrity thing. And if we're a part of that, then we are a powerful force that can bring about amazing creation, which is a huge responsibility that people are often afraid of, or can bring about amazing destruction, which is another huge responsibility. So I think people are just afraid of the responsibility of their own power that comes with being integrated and knowing themselves.
Yeah. Left brain wants equality and measured things out.
The left hemisphere wants everything measured and equal and manipulatable, when maybe sometimes that might be a good thing, but definitely not always. And probably more often we need to accept things for the way they are rather than try to manipulate them into these like controllable bits that we can't really do. And so it's like a strange like cat and mouse game that leads to all the insanity that we deal with in the world.
Yeah. Decussation is one of the coolest things that our brain does, which is where the right hemisphere controls the left side of your body and vice versa. And I think that that is just super fun because it happens at a certain point in your brain. So if there's a lesion, like a physical lesion, like where it is in your brain matters, and it will tell the doctor if the stroke or TBI, whatever TBI it was, happened in which hemisphere. And it just helps you find clues because like if you lose a function of a part of your hand or like a certain side of your body and the other side is fine, it will help you figure out where it is.
Yeah. They've come a long way in mapping out the brain. Like I heard at least almost every modern person that they've been able to test has the same exact circuit in their brain for recognizing Bill Clinton. And then another one not far from it for Homer Simpson. Like we put like these common things onto like very specific circuits within the brain. And
that's reassuring.
And what it shows, I think it's like how that there's a collective unconscious, which is that which we're born with in our instincts and like our innate value structure that has evolved over a million plus years. And then there's our collective consciousness, which also gets mapped into our brain, but like the newer parts of the brain. But yeah, so how do we reintegrate? So we have to save the world now.
Somatics really is the answer. And I'm probably never going to say anything aside from that. But it is a little bit of a cop-out because somatics is the integration of your body and mind. And mind in the sense of the physical lump of brain that's actually in your head. So once we can up the understanding between the two different ways that these things, we'll call them, orient themselves within the world, the better off that we're going to be, because we do need to find home in this first person experience. And a lot of people are either don't know how to set a goal or are not truly in touch with their goals and taking actions all the time that would move them towards that.
When I think of reintegration, and this isn't disagreeing with you, but I think of the interplay between those things, the culture, sort of the collective consciousness, as Jung might call it, or the zeitgeist, versus the collective unconscious, which is that innate primordial feeling structure, you might call it. And then in the middle of those two things, the interplay between those two poles is each individual, and which is sort of like a right hemisphere collectiveness versus a left hemisphere collectiveness. And the individual, sort of like the corpus callosum between those things, will have to, sometimes will want to go one way or the other. Now, going to the right hemisphere can be a lot like schizophrenia and a lot like a crazy person. But going too far to the left is like some of these disembodied NPC, non-player character people that we know about these days that everybody's like, oh no, they need to take like red pills or become woke or whatever else. But what we need to do, again, to sort of use Jungian terms, which is maybe sort of my bias at the time, is to become individuated. Even Nietzsche was big on this before Jung, who was very influential on Jung, of course, which was, forget how he said it exactly, but, and then I think Carl Jung sort of got it from him, but it's like the greatest thing you can do or become is who you are. It's like you have to become who you are. And so becoming who you are means like your unique flowing of both of those worlds, your unique position between the collective unconscious and the collective consciousness. And then the reason this all comes together is, and this kind of gets into the topic of some of the Clubhouse rooms I'm going to be doing, one actually today on Anonymous, and then one on Synchronicity on Friday night, that if we don't integrate those will be like at a chaotic war. And sometimes it comes across as like repressions trying to come out and synchronicities trying to bring back the integration.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like we can either help the integration or we're going to be like crazy person being like, why is everything so chaotic? Ah.
There's a phrase I've been hearing in my head during our conversation, and that is, get you somebody who can do both. And
that's what your head was saying.
and you put
that in air quotes, was that you quoting the voice inside your head?
That was actually me quoting, I think his name is Ray Surimund.
Okay.
Or whoever sings it in the Black Beatles song.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really like that's the truest thing. That's where the magic lies, in your ability to do both of things that are seemingly opposite. And that's just in anywhere. In any aspect. And Jordan Peterson talks about this too, right? Like you're not virtuous if you're a bunny rabbit.
The harmless person is actually the most dangerous, or it can be. They can seem harmless, but because they want to seem all like, I'm so innocent, those ones are often the ones that become serial killers, or they'll like road rage and cause all kinds of problems and all kinds of things. Whereas a person who might seem like a monster, if they can direct their monstrousness towards a noble end, and or even an artistic or creative end, then that's something like an integrated person. And I know a lot of this is interpretive off of this phenomena of like the conscious unconscious or right brain left brain, but it is the big conundrum of how to become more embodied and how to become more integrated or individuated or whole. Yeah, like I said, if we don't actively try to do so, then the right brain tries to make it happen, which kind of gets into this little interpretation of that conversation that Jordan Peterson and Ian McGilchrist were having, where Jordan Peterson's trying to make sense of all of this. And he brought up Matt Ridley and some other books recently that were saying the world is actually becoming a better place, even in spite of how maybe it seems like we're accidentally screwing it up. We're accidentally making it better almost by like eradicating poverty and all of this. And I think that is sort of like, it seems left hemisphere dominant, and this might be a little bit bordering on mysticism, or not necessarily mysticism, but just like the weirdness of how our brains work, which almost seems miraculous, is that we are trying to just like be all materialistic, but in the process, we're actually doing like benevolent things by making the world a super better place, even when that's not exactly our goal. And it might be our selfishness brings about something like a more like altruistic, wholesome, integrated world, but it's tough to judge right now because we're kind of in a transition point.
Universe is constantly expanding, right?
It's expanding, and it is, it's becoming more whole. It's becoming more of what it is. Cause I mean, like if we were just too right brain, we might be very happy in some ways and maybe have lots of art, which there's nothing wrong with that, but we may not have made the important advances that we did in the last couple hundred years at least. So yeah, I think that the integration is happening. It's just that we're in the middle of that process. And we talked a little bit about that last night, whether you want to call it the Ken Wilber transition, I think, from orange to teal, or the getting really mystical, going from Piscean to Aquarian age. But like I was saying too before we were recording, I don't think it's like that mystical. It's just that we've been thinking about it and talking about it for a long time, how that we're going from like a tension of opposites period of time that we've been in for 1,000 to 2,000-ish years to where we're going to like a unity of opposites sort of a culture and world. But yeah, what do you think?
Okay. So it has been so wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for having me. And the conversation will...
Let me conclude that differently then. So Jade, I think we're just about out of time. So is there anything else that you can tell us? And I do apologize for both of us and that we got through this recording, but we had some distractions and we made it through, and we'll definitely publish this with some edits, but we'll probably also do another one in the future on this subject or one very close to it. But anyway, yeah, give us some closing thoughts as we're out of time.
Stick with it, keep learning, keep growing, and find the area of neuroscience that appeals to you, because I 100% guarantee there's something in there for everyone.
All right, yeah, keep becoming whole and integrated and powerful and all those things. And again, thank you very much, and stay tuned for more Jade Sabansky and everything else in the coming weeks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Bringing complex ideas down to earth based on their value, not group identity. This is the Daily Archetype.